Parshas Vayigash opens with a very, very dramatic episode. Yosef, at this point, still pretending to be an Egyptian emperor, a viceroy of the superpower of the day, insists that he will detain Binyamin indefinitely. In fact, for posterity, he's going to keep him as a slave. And the rest of his brothers can go home. And of course, the reason that Yosef has set this entire situation up is because Yosef wants to see whether or not his brothers truly regretted selling him, whether they will abandon Rachel's next child due to their jealousy, or whether they have transcended those previous mistakes, which is the true definition of tshuva. The second reading of Parshas Vayigash opens with the drama reaching a crescendo. It's in the middle of Yehuda's impassioned plea. Chapter 45, verse 31. Yosef said, Yehuda says, "Vahoya kir oisai," and it will come to pass that he will see, "Ki ein hanar," that the young lad, this refers to Binyamin, is not there. "Vahiridu avadecha esevas avdecha," your servants will bring down the sagacious head, or the sagacity, meaning referring to Yaakov, of your servant Avinu, our father, b'yagoyin she'ela, in an abyss of misery, or an abyss of misfortune. Now, the first question that we might ask in reading this verse is, it says, v'hoya chir oisai, when he will see ki ein hanar, that the lad isn't there, v'meis, and he will die. So the question is, who will die? Rashi is very clear. Oviv mitzarosei, our father, Jacob, will die because the pain will be simply too much to bear. We do see later on indications that Yaakov suffers from cardiac disease. He has a weak heart due to all the stress that he's been through. And Yaakov says his heart will simply not be able to suffer. Yehuda says, another such loss. Vahiridu avdecha, your servants will bring him down into the grave, into the abyss of misfortune. So what does that mean? Yehuda is not going to bring him down into that abyss. It's Joseph who's going to do this. And since he's making this impassioned plea to Yosef, he should say, you will bring down our father. You will destroy our father. Is that really what you want to do? You want to destroy an old man's life who suffered so much? What are you doing? So Ramban says that the idea of a haridu is kind of a kinui. Kinui means a euphemism. It's not to be taken actually or literally as if we will bring down. And the meaning is to say, he meant to say you, but he said instead we. It's like a respectful way to speak to royalty. So you see, we will be causing this terrible disaster to happen. But actually, it's not we. It's actually you. But respectfully, he said we will cause, as if Yehuda was a part of this. Ramban also says that there may be a way to understand this literally. And that's because, ultimately, who brought Binyamin? They did. Who took responsibility? He did. So if some things go wrong, who then is responsible? We are, he says. Never mind that you forced us into this. Let's look aside from the fact that we chose, that you twisted our arms. But in the end, we chose to do it. So you will be causing us not only to violate this protocol in bringing Binyamin down to Egypt, but furthermore, you will be the cause of us bringing our father into an abyss, essentially killing our father. Interestingly, Rashi doesn't comment that perhaps the Rashi was pleased with either approach, and he figures you'll understand it by yourself. So it's not so hard to understand. Now, Yehuda kind of makes the case. First of all, before we go further, it says, Yagoin she'ela. Yagoin is grief, misfortune. But when Yaakov himself said that if my son doesn't come home, he said, I will go down in an evil abyss, in a bad abyss. He didn't use the word misfortune. He said bad. So why do we switch here? Why does Yehuda depart from the language his father used, and why does he instead employ his own words? So the Moira HaFela suggests that Yagoin is misfortune and agony. Where do people have misfortune? Where is agony found in this world? This is a world that's a lot of agony, a lot of pain, lot of suffering. So that means Avelum Haza. Yaakov said Bira'ah, he meant permanent evil. What's permanent evil? What's bad? Bad for posterity is the world to come. So Yaakov referred to the world to come. And that was Yaakov's prerogative. He could talk about what will happen. If I lose my son now, he says, I will go into the abyss. I will be held accountable. Somehow under my watch it all happened. Rachel died. Yosef died. Shimon disappeared. And now Binyamin, I will go down. But Yehuda obviously can't say that. Yaakov can say that about himself. Yehuda can say, here's what I do know. He talks about the future, eternity, afterlife. I don't know if I can say that. This is what I can say is that we will cause him to die. And that means Elum Hazah. That means in this world. Ki avdecha orav esanar, for your servant has placed surety, or taken full responsibility for the young lad, me'im avi, from our father Lamer, saying, im lo yavienu elecha, if we will not bring him to you, or if I will not bring him to you, v'chotasi la'avi kol hayomim, that I will be held culpable in a state of sin before my father forever, all days. Rashi says, what is the ki avdecha? Key is like because, it's a reason. So Rashi explains, Yehuda says to Yosef further, Ve'im toimar, and if you might ask or say, Loma ani nichnas letigor Yosef misha'ar achai, why am I involving myself in this situation? Who appointed me the spokesperson? Why is it that I seem to have more skin in this game than anybody else, more so than my other brothers? He says, I'll tell you, Heim kulam mi bachutz, they have, so to speak, surfacially aligned themselves and committed themselves to bring Binyamin home. However, ani, he says, I nitkasharti bekesher chazak. I have bound myself in a very strong knot. Lihiyos menuda b'shnei olamos. I have promised to accept upon myself excommunication, separation, permanent ousting, both from this world and the world to come. So not only is my life ruined here, not only are my relationships going to be irreparable here, but in the future, my soul will suffer. So therefore, Yehuda says, Ki avdecha, I'm speaking because I have made this statement. I have made this commitment. I have the most skin in the game. The Bala Turim says something very interesting. It's a very practical answer. The Torah says, you shouldn't think that I'm planning to stay here instead of Binyamin because I'm a better or more capable escapee. It's like, don't leave Binyamin here. He's a shlomazel. He won't get out of the situation. Take me as your slave. Ha! Give me 2 weeks, I'll be out of here. He says, don't think that's the reason. I'm not saying take me because I think I can escape whereas he can't. I'm saying take me because I have made this absolute commitment. And in the end, if I don't bring him home, I will be in a state of sin against my father. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that against my father means against God. For God is our father. And he says, what Yehuda meant to do with this statement was include both Yaakov, his earthly father, as well as God, his heavenly father. So I will sin before my father is a broad and inclusive statement. Kol hayomim, all the days, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, that refers be'olam hazeh, to this world, to terrestrial life, uve'olam haba, and for eternal life, for the life of the soul, for the life of the future. That's the situation I'm in. Va'ata, and now he says, verse 33, Yeshev no avdecho tachas hanar, let me stay. I will be in the stead of the young man. I will be an eved la'adoni. I will be a servant to the master. The hanar and the young man, ya'al im echov. He will rise up together with his brothers. Don't stay in his way. Rashi says, Yeshev no avdecho v'goymer. What does this mean when he says, you'll take me as a slave instead? He says, I'm better, more effective as a slave anyway. L'chol davar, for everything, ani me'ula mimenu, I am going to be a more efficacious candidate for whatever you have in mind. Whether it's the gvura, whether you need brute strength for heavy labor, whether you need milchama, whether you wish to send somebody off to the front lines and risk his life. You know, that's what they used to do with the servants. They'd send these human waves before they sent the actual well-trained soldiers. Or l'shamish, whether you want me to serve in some kind of clerical office position. Trust me, I'm more capable than him. I'm stronger, more adept. I'll figure it out. You want me. Let the young man go home. So Yehuda has staked his life out, basically. He says, here I am. This is the way it's going to be. Now, the Mincha Blula asks a very interesting question. Yehuda promised he would return Binyamin, but if he is left behind in Egypt, how will he return Binyamin? He's not going to keep his word. So the Mincha Blula says, when it comes to oaths, when it comes to promises, when a person swears, the Gemara tells us, Halech achar lashon bnei adam. We look for the common language. What do people usually speak like when they say something? What did they probably mean? So if a person would say, I'm prepared to lift a ton of bricks, he probably doesn't mean a ton of bricks. I'm going to eat my hat if something happens. You don't actually have to flavor your hat with salt and pepper and eat it. It's a euphemism. It's an expression. So when it comes to a neder, a vow, even though we take vows very seriously, and one must keep the words that he uttered, it doesn't have to be literal in the fullest sense. A person could use words that in the end have a broader or poetic meaning. So here, the Mincha Blula says, we could say same. Yehuda indeed said he would bring Binyamin home, but the emphasis was not on him bringing him home. He wasn't going to carry him home with a pacifier. That wasn't the point. He would make sure. And so he did make sure. This is good enough. The case has been made, and now the spotlight's back on Yosef. What will he say? At this point, Yosef sees that his brothers have done tshuva. That Yehuda, who previously suggested sell him as a slave, let's get rid of him, is now ready to risk his own life and spend the rest of his life in indentured servitude, as long as it means Binyamin should be saved. If so, Yosef reasons, the family is now whole again. And so, chapter 45, verse 1, Yosef could no longer restrain himself before all of those who had been gathered to watch this very strange and dramatic scene unfold. Vayikra, he cried out, Haitziu chol ish me'oloi, let every person leave here now. V'loi amadish, the Torah states, in fact, nobody was there. Itoi with him, behisvada Yosef elecha, when Yosef revealed himself or confessed to his brothers. Rashi says, what does he mean, le'yochol? He couldn't. What couldn't he? What couldn't you do? I can't lift 1,000 pounds. I know that I can't do that. What was Yosef saying? He can't. So Rashi says, Lehoyo yochel lispel, he couldn't take it. Sheyiyu mitzriyim nitzavim alav, that these Egyptians, his own courtiers, his assistants, his aides, but nonetheless a foreign people, should be there. Vahoyu shoymen, v'shoymen, they should hear, she'echav mizbaishin behivod oilohem. How his brothers be so ashamed when he says, I am Yosef. I am the brother you sold into slavery. And he knew the incredible wave of shame that would wash over them. And Yosef couldn't imagine, he couldn't fathom doing this in front of other people, increasing their shame so manyfold. And so he set out, everybody leave. In fact, the words Vayikra, according to Ramban, means Hadim Koiloi. He raised his voice because in anger, and he angrily cried out, out! Barking a command. And of course, when the king or viceroy barks a command, everybody listens. Ramban says he didn't want the others to hear that brothers had sold him into slavery, his own brothers. How would they look at those brothers in the future? Clearly, somebody had abducted and sold him into slavery, but the story didn't have to get out. How bad would it look in the pages of the National Enquirer the next day of Egypt? How bad would it be on Facebook and Twitter? What would everybody be talking about? The brothers who sold their own brother into slavery. Who does that? Yesterday, Shabbos, better for bringing. We're talking about the fact that Yosef doesn't send word to his father. And I was trying to explain that Yosef can send word to his father if he's going to be able to recreate the situation and bring the family back together. I went around the table. I said, yeah, you have any fight with your siblings? And some people admitted they had fights with their siblings. And I asked them if they had ever actually considered killing their sibling or selling their sibling into slavery. And everybody had to admit that despite the fact that there had not been good feelings at times between them, nobody had ever entertained doing that. That's pretty low. That's pretty bad. He also doesn't want the Egyptians to endlessly now in the future look at his brothers. Ha! These are the brothers who sold their own sibling into slavery. So he said, out. Everybody had to be out. And Yosef begins now to speak to his brothers. He raises his voice in a tear-stained voice, weeping. Vayishmo Mitzrayim, Egypt hears. Vayishma Bespare, the house of the Pharaoh hears. Rashi says, Vayishma Bespare? You want to tell me that the people outside the door could hear weeping? Okay. But Bespare, how close could the Pharaoh's house? Yosef was in the royal district I understand it was downtown, whatever it was, but they could hear this voice. How loud could he have cried? So Rashi says, it doesn't mean the house. First of all, Beisei Shalpari means Kalemet Avadavim Beisei. It means his servants, his courtiers, his aides, his assistants, the princes or princesses, people in the house. Vein Zalashim Bayis Mamish. It doesn't mean, literally mean a house. So we're not talking about the physical walls. We're not talking about literal proximity. Kemoi Beis Yisrael, Beis Yehuda, the house of Israel, the house of Judah. So it means people heard. People heard. The royal entourage heard. In the royal compound that was being spoken. People heard about this. Rashi says there's even a French word for it. Mishdina. I don't know what that is. So this is everybody heard. Everybody heard something big had just gone down in Joseph's palace. Vayomer Yosef el Echov, Yosef says to his brothers, Ani Yosef. I am Joseph. Ha'oy Davi Chai. Is my father still alive? Vayochlo Echov Lanus, I say, his brothers could not even respond to him. They couldn't answer. Ki nivhalu miponov, because they become so ashamed, so they shrank before him. Yosef sees his brothers shrinking away, backing off. Vayomer Yosef el Echov Gishuno Eli, come closer. Vayigshu, they did. Vayomer Ani Yosef, I am Joseph. Achichem, your brother, Hashem Achartem Esim Etzroima. I'm your brother. I'm the one you sold into Egypt. Vayata, he says, Al Tiyotzvu. Don't grieve. Don't feel bad. Yichu Beinechem. Don't feel bad in your eyes. Kim Achartem Esim that you sold me. Hey, no, here. Kilim Michesh Lachani Elikim Lefnechem. Because God has sent me before you. And then he says, because it's 2 years into the famine and there's 5 years yet to come. And verse 7, God has sent me before you to provide great deliverance for all of you. And then in the next verse, in verse 8, beginning of the third reading, it says, now you wasn't you who sold, rather, or you sent me here, but rather God sent me here. So we're going to try to understand now, first of all, this question. What a question is that? We've been talking about Yaakov continuously during all these meetings and encounters. Now you ask, is he alive? What kind of question is that? And why does Yosef keep emphasizing this mission that he has? He invokes God's name no less than 3 times in 4 verses. He's saying the same thing. Why bother? Ha'oidavichai, the tour says, there was just a way to get into a conversation with him. That was their common interest. The one thing they both cared deeply about without any question was their father. So he says, my father's still alive. It's not to be taken literally. The Torah also says, perhaps Yosef is saying, is he alive or is he half dead? The cause is health. I never really heard how his health is. Is he functioning? The Maharik, another great Rishon, he says Yosef was asking, how is his level of spiritual acuity, his prophecy? Because if he was a prophet, he should have known I was here. If he didn't know I was here, maybe he's not a prophet. Has he lost his prophetic ability? Is he no longer an inspired holy tzaddik? Is he now just an old man? That was the question. Couldn't understand. And of course, Yaakov did lose some of his prophetic ability during those days of sadness. And it comes back to him. As it says, Vatechi Ruach Yaakov Avim. Yaakov's spirit was resuscitated. It came back to life. And that was Yosef's question. So these are some of the ways the Rishonim resolve this seemingly intractable issue of, is my father still alive? When, you know, it seems Yosef would know him. So listen to this. Here's how the Rebbe explains this question. Tomu Amafarshan, Rebbe begins his comment on page Resh, Ayin Zayin, in the Biurim book, Simon Hay of Parshas Vayigash. The commentaries on the Chumash have all expressed astonishment. What is the meaning of Ha'oid Ovichai? What does that mean? Is my father still alive? Harek Vayoda, he should have known him in Hadvarim, Divrayim, from their words, Pa'amayim, Sholesh, 2 times, 3 times. It's been repeated ad infinitum, it seems. They keep talking about Jacob. That's what this is all about. Shehu Chai. If Jacob had not been alive, would Judah have gone to such lengths to save Binyamin? Seems not. V'nir loimar, it seems, Shedivri Yosef, Ha'oy Dovi Chai, that the words of Yosef, which we read with incredulous kind of emphasis, a question mark, is my father still alive? Rebbe says, no. It's not a question, but rather it's a tmiya. He's expressing astonishment. He's expressing a certain bewilderment. So you read it not with a question mark, but rather with an exclamation mark. Is my father still alive? In other words, On the verse earlier that it said that you could not somehow bring any comfort to Jacob. No, he wouldn't accept anybody's consolation. Rashi says, why not? After all, people do accept consolation. We know that bereavement is somewhat effective. So Rashi says, Ein Adam Mekabel Tanchumin Alachai. Nobody can accept consolation, can't be comforted when the person is still alive. And therefore, if you think he's dead, but really he's still alive, the consolation will not work. Because there is a divine decree that we forget the dead. Slowly but surely, the dead, people, our beloved ones will leave us, we slowly but surely let go. The pain lessens, becomes less intense, or at least less frequent, and we move on. That's the way God made us. That's the way God built us. That's not a bad thing. It's human nature. That's who we are. But if the loved one is still alive, if he's in captivity, the pain never abates for a moment. It continues. You can't heal from that. You can't heal from a relative being abducted. You can heal from a relative's death. V'lochein, because Yaakov was actually mourning or grieving for a son who he was told was dead, but in fact was still alive. And deep down in his heart of hearts, subconsciously, he never gave up on the idea that Yosef was really still alive. So he could never accept any kind of consolation. He grieved, he mourned for many, many days. This then, says the Rebbe, is the deeper meaning of Yosef's question. Ani Yosef, he says, but I am Joseph, meaning I'm alive. And if so, ha'oid avichai, if I'm alive, how is he alive? If I'm here, it means the pain was continuous. Mikivan shani b'chayim, because I'm alive. Ve'in kan gzeiras hashikchum in alev, there is no divine decree of memory doing its merciful deed of mitigating the situation, of minimizing the intensity of the memories of the past. That's why we say good old days. Were they so good? Maybe. Maybe not. But they're always good old days. Because our memory dulls the uncomfortable and painful things of the past. What does our memory try to keep and maintain? Only the nice things. So therefore, when we think of the old days, what do we think of? Only the good things. And that's why we say the good old days. But it's not really so, necessarily. And so, when Yosef is in a situation where the past is gone, but the present, it's here. Yosef says, I'm alive. I'm not the past. I'm here. And if so, that means 22 years, his Abelolayavi, my father, has experienced this pain. That is a tsar built in nitfas. It's intractable. Impossible to grasp such a pain. Kate said, you're talking, how could it be? Yaakov Nishar B'chayim. How in heaven did my father stay alive? How didn't he have a heart attack and collapse from so much pain? Who can suffer? Who can withstand so much pain? Call us, shun him all the years like this. Now this explains why Yosef's next statement is, rush, great haste. Hey, dude, he delayed this 22 years. Now all of a sudden you have to rush? Now 22 minutes makes a difference? After 22 years? Yosef says, Maharu, go and tell him. Go tell him this is what your son Yosef said. So manili kin lod luchomitzayim. God has placed me as the master of all of Egypt. And today Eli, come down. Al tamay, don't tarry, don't delay, don't wait a moment. What he's really saying is, achrei tzar koy gadol, after so much pain, after so much suffering, after so much personal anguish, every additional moment feels like an eternity. Moments of eternity. Don't delay this anymore. It's bad enough we have to go till here. Bring Yaakov as soon as possible. And this, says the Rebbe, explains to us why three times in four verses Yosef emphasizes, I'm a man with a mission. This is a mission-driven man. Why? Because if Yosef's so worried about his father, well, in that case, pick yourself up and go see your father. Why just bring him a message? And then he has to deal with the pain or wait till he comes. And you say, you don't want to waste another moment. In that case, Yosef, get on the fastest steed, ride like the wind, and get there. And then go tell your father, I am Yosef. So Yosef explains, I can't do that. Why not? Because I have a shlichut, he says. I've been given a mission. I'm here, I'm a mission-driven man. And because I'm a man with a mission, I have no choice. I cannot leave, but you may. And so you must. And with this, the verses of the scripture make a lot of sense and give us tremendous insight into many things, including human nature and the power and profundity of Yosef's thinking and what exactly he was seeking on that fateful and very dramatic day.
Thank you.